My name is Tim Gallaudet. I was an admiral in the US Navy. My specialty was oceanography. And after that, I worked in a US government at a pretty high level. I led an agency called the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. I was acting undersecretary, and my permanent position was Assistant Secretary of Commerce. And left that in 2021. And now I'm consultant for a variety of ocean weather, climate, and environmental technology companies, and do some nonprofit work for ocean conservation and veterans.
Okay. And with the kind of main highlight of this interview is obviously going to be talking about unidentified aerial phenomena. This is what the US government's been addressing over the past few years, pretty much since 2017 with the New York Times. And I know you've taken an interest in this subject. So I'd like to start with, I suppose, when did you personally take notice or interest in unidentified aerial phenomena, or UFOs as it's traditionally called?
Yeah, UAPs now is the parlance. And so I've always just been interested in questions about kind of why, where do we come from and the nature of those things. And I really got interested in cosmology and astrophysics because I was the superintendent of the US Naval Observatory and a really interesting institution which has a main function to create catalogs of star positions and their brightnesses. And in working with those astrophysicists, I began to really just become fascinated at the scale of our universe, and it's incredibly fascinating, large and small scale structure. And of course, then you begin to wonder, is there life out there? And you think about that when you look at that. And then so that's always a question when you're studying such topics. And then it crystallized for me in 2016, I believe, or 2015. I don't really remember the exact date. I had been a one-star admiral at the time in charge of a command with a headquarters on the Gulf Coast of Mississippi. And I was in charge of all the Navy meteorology and oceanography professionals that did weather for aircraft carrier flight operations, for example. And I received an email, a classified email on the secret internet that the Navy and the US government uses. And it was from the operations officer of my boss, the US Fleet Forces Command commander, who was in charge of all the operating forces in the Navy. And the title of it was Urgent Safety of Flight. And he sent this email to every subordinate commander under him. These are all the 1 and 2 stars who ran Navy operations, or it could be commanders of strike groups. Me, I was a shoreside commander. This is a lot of people. I mean, maybe dozen, 2 dozen flag officers. And admirals like me. And it had a video from there were 2 incidents that everybody knows well. There was the 2004 incident of the Nimitz. And then there was an incident off the Norfolk area. And I forgot the strike group involved, but they're very similar where these F-18s were encountering these UAPs. And the videos had the footage from the F-18s of these objects doing things we could not explain. Like Go Fast one is very famous. That's the one I saw. And the ops officer, the 2-star, asked us all if we knew anything about this, what was going on, if it was a secret, like a DARPA project, Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, or he just said, if you know anything about this, tell me immediately, because this is becoming a safety of flight issue. We've had several potential mid-air collisions or close, nearly mid-air. And I pulled my deputy in, a civilian of the senior executive service. And we both looked at that video and we were like, oh, wow, this is something. And we'd always kind of wondered. And now we had this evidence. And it wasn't a joke. We were getting it from our higher headquarters. And the next day, those emails, those videos, they were stripped from our computers. And then, and whatever it was, 2019, 2020, I forgot, they were then released or declassified. And so that just sort of piqued my interest. And
And
that's why
the
I've, go ahead.
no, I was just going to say these are the same videos that everyone's now seeing out in the public, the three black and white infrared FLIR cam videos.
Correct. I one of them I think is the one I saw, and now I because of that interest I've become to know Avi Loeb at the Galileo Project, and I have a PhD in oceanography. I have a scientific mind, and I think he's doing the right thing to
Well, you're on
dedicate.
the team now, aren't you? You're on the team.
I am a research affiliate with the Galileo Project, and yes, and I think he's doing a great thing to apply scientific discipline to try to understand what these are.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Aside from these videos, were you ever exposed to anything during your career, perhaps during your time as administrator of NOAA, that you believe to be anomalous, perhaps UFO related or anything underwater that's behaving strangely?
Well, no, personally, I have not. But they just that was enough for me. No, also, seeing what's reported, it's hard to believe how many thousands of reports come out, and often involve incredible observers, witnesses, police officers, military personnel. And so that's always been in the background for me. And it really just took seeing that video and learning about what's happening. The now the Pentagon office is being stood up now. Just this week, NASA dedicating a whole study team to it. And it, obviously people are becoming aware. And I mean, I wrote an op-ed in The Hill. I think you read it, Jay. And I talked about the fact that the only reason we haven't been addressing these early is this stigma associated with some of the fringe elements of people who study these phenomena.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the stigma is starting to dissipate. I think the problem with this issue is that there is a surface level of knowledge that I think is relatively acceptable. Like, we have there are these advanced platforms that are behaving in ways we can't really explain, and it could potentially be something very interesting. I think that's the kind of surface level blueprint that people are being given in the public. But I mean, I think a lot of people, I mean, I would say I would hasten to guess that there are some elements of the government and the private industry that know, quite a sophisticated level of knowledge on this issue. But even within the UFO research community, there are those of us who have been looking into this for quite some time, some people decades, and there is a lot to unpack with this subject. It's maybe not so simple as just these objects flying around in the sky and. There is a lot to try and address. And so I wonder where the US government's going to try and take this as they progress through this, obviously with the Senate and Congress getting involved. It's still a very basic discussion. And I think that a lot of us know, and perhaps you yourself know, that this subject is actually quite a large nexus of phenomena,
Well, right. I've listened to many of your episodes, and that
Thank
when you
you.
look at it's great what you do. There's a greater awareness people are becoming to I think possess, and that's good that you're fostering that. And you're right. I don't have in fact, my faith in the government arriving sooner than anyone else is pretty low. Not that I don't believe in the U.S. government. I was a part of it for 36 years, but government moves slow. There are many stovepipes and red tape, as they call that. And if you just look at what the DoD office is doing, I wouldn't, first of all, they're probably not going to share any of their data because most of the data they have is classified. And then with NASA, I think it's going to be the same way. And that's why Avi Loeb of the Galileo Project wrote a kind of
Yeah, I saw
a
that.
lively his articles are terrific. He I think the title of it was oh
Imitation is
God.
the sincerest form of flattery, I believe was the maybe the title, yeah.
That absolutely was it. And he talked about NASA basically finally getting on board because he had been doing this for a year. And they wouldn't bring him on board because they said it would be a conflict of interest. And I don't want to go into that, but that ultimately the government is just moved slow. And in fact, interesting, what I'm doing in my main job now as a consultant is I've embraced all these great commercial tech companies who are really getting it, just like some of your kind of, I think, very open-minded host or guests that you've had on. They also are moving faster than our typically sluggish government, and that's really why I want to be on your show. Is I think they're not going to come to the answer quicker than maybe others like the Galileo Project, and that's why I'm enjoying being on it. And not to blame anything, that there's reasons for the government being slow, and it's usually wrapped around a lot of laws passed by Congress to use taxpayer dollars with good stewardship.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think obviously the bureaucratic pace of government is what it is. That's just the way that this system works. But at the same time, I think that the congressional interest and Senate interest and the fact that we've had the hearing recently, it's all just serving as a way of providing a blueprint for people to find this an acceptable thing to be interested in. And then obviously the scientific and academic engagement that's coming off of the back of that, like the Galileo Project and UAPX and a few other different endeavors. Like you place a lot more faith in civilian initiatives and efforts than I do in government programs or any sort of disclosure process. What did you think of the hearings? Because A lot of us weren't exactly surprised at the lack of satisfactory answers from these two officials. What were your thoughts on the hearing?
I agree with you, Jay. This is very, it was very perfunctory. Congress said do it and they did it and that's it. You know, there's so much there, I'm sure. And I've testified in front of Congress and I know exactly what was going through their heads. They had, you know, they had the answer to other people in the Department of Defense and they had to kind of stick to a script really. And there's reasons for that. And because the department is very, the Department of Defense in this case, very slow to go out and make policy. And whenever you testify on the Hill for a department, a cabinet level office, you have to really stay to the script because it's not your job to make policy. It's your job to follow it. They've not wanted to get ahead of this and really be wide ranging or thinking. They're still trying to figure out, I think, what they want to do. And it's just because the Department of Defense is so unwieldy. So that's, again, going back, let's get some scientists and others, like you mentioned, NGOs to media companies to go after this and maybe get a better answer sooner.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, one issue that was brought up in the hearing that caught many within the UFO research community by surprise was the mentioning of what are known as the Admiral Wilson documents or the Eric Davis notes. Are you familiar with those documents?
Just vaguely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, this is something that I didn't really expect to have pop up. And although the two officials did basically deny having any knowledge of what they were about, the fact that that was brought up and is now actually on congress.gov, the website, there's a PDF of the documents on the website, which is literally a discussion apparently between a DOD astrophysicist and a former director of the DIA who's telling this physicist that he was denied access to UFO reverse engineering programs and that he looked into the black budget indexes of the Pentagon and found these sub programs and compartments and eventually was allowed a meeting with these three representatives of a program, an unacknowledged special access program, waived or carved out. And he was basically given a little introductory hello and told, you're not going to get any access. And the fact that that was actually brought up in the hearing and is actually on congress.gov is quite interesting. And I think that that probably signifies that there is quite a few people within the Congress who are aware of this document. Eric Davis is quite a vocal individual. He's now a bit more quiet because he works for Aerospace Corporation, but he's spoken to Leslie Kane from the New York Times and other individuals. So it's interesting that they brought that up.
Oh, it's very interesting. I know the Aerospace Corporation well. Mm. And here's what I know in my perspective. Okay, I was in the government for 32 years, most of it in defense, have been read into black programs. And the way nature of those are that only a small number of people for security reasons are able to have access and knowledge of those programs. And it's very tightly controlled for great reason. But then it results in the things you just mentioned. Senior people like the Secretary of Defense himself not knowing what's going on in his department. And it creates a very interesting situation when you think about it, that only a small cobble, if you will, of people in the DOD have access to certain things like this. Now, for the record, I've not been read into any UAP related programs. And so I don't know. I cannot say there are any or there aren't. But you can sort of guess, you know, when you have disclosures like this and knowing of what we can see as a Department of Defense, it doesn't take, you know, hard to put 2 + 2 together to know that there might they exist and they may exist.
I mean, what do you think? Do you think that the U.S. government has materials, maybe even technological, that aren't human?
Well, again, I don't know, Jay, but I have a hard time
what does
believing
your gut
they
tell
don't.
You? Yeah, what does your gut tell you?
I have a hard time believing they don't because I know what they have been able to collect in terms of just the nature of our adversaries. And that's and then if there are thousands of very credible reports out there and we have the most, our U.S. military has the most sophisticated collection systems on the planet. it's not a stretch. It's not a stretch at all.
Yeah. Would you say that this would be a cover-up since around the Roswell time?
Well, that's everyone wants to say that it was a cover-up. You know, again, my experience is probably that you have compartmented programs that have the information And their job is to protect the information. That, and the nature of it is this: it's very interesting. So these are things that I just know, and people maybe don't see or understand. So that's all there. That's the kind of the role of the department to protect their information and their capabilities, not disclose sources and methods. And I include the intelligence community in this. But then when not happy, Congress gets involved. That's why they passed these on the in the National Defense Authorization Act. That's why the direction was by Gillibrand was issued to stand up the office and start reporting on the science and scientific nature of these phenomena, because they realized they weren't getting what they wanted. And it's a weird dynamic. This happened to me at NOAA, but not with UAPs, in that Congress passing legislation because they wanted to see us do a better job, whether it be hurricane research or what have you. And so that is just the dynamic. And it's great because I don't think it would ever happen naturally or organically in the Department of Defense.
Do you think that there's any chance that this could be like foreign adversarial technology, or are you kind of quite convinced that this is something a bit stranger than a prosaic explanation?
That's a great question. And I, again, from what I know, I don't, I, we would, I don't think it's a foreign capability. I don't think it's a terrestrial in nature. I think there are reasons for that, because I've been read into things of adversary capabilities. And first of all, if our adversary had capabilities like this, there's a very good chance that we would have them too. That's the way these things work. Counterintelligence and whatnot, and it wouldn't be so. I just don't know of any instances where we have been so caught off guard like this. I have a hard time believing it. And but it's not impossible. I just think it's not likely.
I want to run a kind of scenario past you, because this was something that was suggested to me by someone who got in contact with me a couple years ago, claiming to be a GS-15 rank intelligence officer within the NSA. And there's a few people that have been connected to this individual since I got in contact with them, and we're all a little bit on the fence of whether or not this is a legitimate source or not. But he's certainly quite a interesting and impressive individual. And basically, like the scenario, let's say that a program exists within the world of black projects, within which they've been exploiting a beyond next generation platform that was recovered many years ago and is believed to be non-human in origin. And they have, over the course of decades, managed to create a platform that, at least to some degree, mimics this very advanced non-human technology and is utilizing a breakthrough energy and propulsion system, very disruptive thing that's not been witnessed before. Now, let's say during the process of creating this beyond next generation platform, based off of the exploitation of some non-human technology, they get to a phase in the technological readiness test where this platform is ready to be tested in a mock operational environment. Obviously, you'd want to see how this hyper advanced technology would respond to your most advanced surface world offensive and defensive forces, and vice versa. So, what they decide to do is drop this disruptive asset into the middle of a series of naval war games or training scenarios. And in doing so, they have absolute control over the environmental parameters. No armaments will be utilized by the carrier strike group, no risk of a live fire on your disruptive asset, but you do get the opportunity to gauge the response time and overall capability of your most advanced military forces when they're faced with a breakthrough technology that exceeds their performance capabilities completely. And this might be an important test to perform if, for example, you know that your enemies are doing the same thing, when you know that countries like Russia or China are also exploiting these advanced technologies that they've recovered. So it might become necessary to know how your surface world military forces would respond to a highly advanced threat. And then when you take into account, and I think it was the Roosevelt, maybe the one that you were forgetting the name
Yeah,
of, the USS
that was it.
Roosevelt, there was a couple of high-ranking non-uniformed officers who came on board the USS Roosevelt during that UAP event, and they confiscated the radar bricks before promptly leaving. And it makes me wonder if, and this is what this person suggested, that the Roosevelt and Nimitz events were in fact a series of technological readiness tests for the purposes of understanding how we would respond to a beyond next generation platform. And perhaps we have a good reason to be concerned that such a platform might be used against us. But you've obviously said that you feel that you've been given enough intelligence to suggest that these kind of propulsion methods are not being used by our enemies. But what do you think of the overall idea of that scenario? Is it plausible? Is it something that they would maybe do, or is that a bit too outrageous?
I guess it's plausible, Jay. That world of NSA and intelligence, counterintelligence, these black programs, they're weird. And that stuff like this, I would say, well, in general, it would surprise you. Okay. So I would say it's possible. I think it's also, again, highly unlikely just based on what I know in this particular situation with the Roosevelt, because, you know, I've been part of the military system. I met with secretaries of defense and chiefs of naval operations, and, you know, and I know how it works. In fact, a very good friend of mine was an undersecretary of defense for intelligence in the last administration. And, you know, very plausible, I guess, scenarios exist where you'd want to test, let's say we have the technology, or you want to test it against conventional forces, but we would never do it to where we may potentially endanger those forces and create these sort of conflicts and blue on blue or whatever it is. Like in this exercise, Comp2X, there'd be so many opportunities for things to go wrong and kill sailors that it would never be. I just can't see that happening. It'd be like, you know, you'd have CIA going totally counter rogue to the DOD, and the DOD owns DIA. And so it's just like, I can't imagine them getting in there without approval at the DNI level. The Director of National Intelligence. Okay. I can't see the DNI saying, okay, we're going to allow lower level offices to basically put the safety of sailors and pilots at risk to do some demonstration. We can do all of that in classified training ranges. We don't need to do that ever. Yeah, out in a totally open airspace in the U.S. exclusive economic zone that our adversaries actually have access to and could surveil, right? In fact, there's another reason why you'd never do it, because then our adversaries, who are like Russia did this all the time, you know, with their fishing trawlers out there with tons of SIGINT and ELINT collecting on our naval exercises, that the remote possibility that a foreign adversary could be collecting on technology like that would just rule out immediately, other than in addition to safety of flight of our sailors and pilots, that kind of an instance of ever happening. Stuff happens like that, you know, again, in classified training ranges, they're controlled and they're instrumented so that we know exactly what's going on. That just doesn't happen in my experience, but I wouldn't rule it out 100%, because I was not a part of the ICE. I was really remotely part of the intelligence community. I was in naval intelligence, if you will. Oceanography and intelligence are in the same community, but not, I was never like doing, and I have friends in the NSA, but that just sounds, I'd like to meet this person. That's all I got to say. Maybe it happened, but I just so doubt it.
All right. Well, Holden, if you're listening, I'll put you in touch with Tim and we'll, we'll see how you guys get on.
Oh yeah. Tell me about it.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely see your point there. What do you have any ideas about what they might be doing lurking around these training ranges, buzzing naval ships? I mean, do you think that this is reconnaissance on our military offensive capabilities?
My thoughts on this, Jay, are that, I mean, we're moving out as a nation, as a society, and really advancing drone technology. It's just everywhere. I led programs in the Navy and at NOAA to use drones for environmental surveillance, whether oceanography, meteorology, you name it. And just fast forward that technology a decade, two, a century. No reason to believe whoever is the agent here, agency controlling these things, that technology exists today. And it's just a much more advanced state. And that's probably just one possibility, but I like Avi Loeb's perspective on this phenomenon in a general way. We've only been on this planet for a small sliver of the universe's existence. And we have devices that are now, we hold in our hand, and every bit of information ever collected in the history of the universe really is accessible by these small little devices. What are we going to be like in 100 years or a million years? And a million years still is a small little window based on the whole existence of the universe. So Avi likes to talk about, you know, there's probably other civilizations all around, and they have probably, maybe they've evolved and they've decayed, and there just might be remnant technology all around, or they're active, and they're actually exploring, like we did in the, you know, the age of sail and the great period of exploration with Columbus and whatnot. Why not kids think that would be happening? To me, it's so narrow-minded to think the universe isn't teeming with life, and now we're being observed by countless other civilizations. They're smart enough not to interact with us because they know it wouldn't go well.
Yeah, we might think we're so sophisticated, but really we're just monkeys throwing missiles around. So I'm sure we're viewed with quite a bit of caution from any sort of cosmic neighbors.
Absolutely do. Yeah, I agree.
But I agree with you. I think that it's likely teeming with life. And I think the consensus amongst a lot of the scientists who actually look at this properly imagine that the most successful life would be artificial intelligence to some degree, and that the first contact scenario between human beings and some form of alien life would likely be a form of AI that can obviously exist in the vacuum of space for centuries if needs be, maybe a self-replicating machine of, I think they're called von Neumann probes or something like that. These are interesting ideas, and I think that we are really, I really do think we're on the precipice of some major breakthroughs and discoveries within the next decade with this type of subject. I think we're just on that edge. Our scientific sophistication is getting to a point where our models for reality are starting to be disrupted quite heavily in a lot of different ways. And I think that our scientific interpretations of what reality really is and how reality works are going to be challenged quite significantly within the next 10, 15, 20 years. Like, I can't even imagine what 50 years into the future is going to be like. So it's an interesting time to be alive, man.
Amen. You're right. It's exciting too. And I like the way Avi has put it. He calls his project the Galileo Project, hearkening back to Galileo himself, who broke a paradigm with this Earth-centric to heliocentric system. And we are in the verge of potentially, again, discovering a whole new paradigm, which should not surprise any of us.
Yeah, it shouldn't surprise any of us. Would you be happy to talk about your own family's experiences with so-called paranormal phenomena? Because this was something that you mentioned to me, and it certainly feels like it probably played a role in opening you up to some larger concepts about the nature of reality and the nature of what we call the paranormal. Is this something you'd be comfortable speaking about?
I would absolutely like to do that. So here, I'll share it with you. And so like, this is a weird thing, by the way, or interesting thing, and we're still kind of trying to understand it, as we all are. Because this, you see a sort of grouping of UAP and paranormal, and how does it intersect? And the answer is, I don't know. But I have my one set of experiences from the Navy and observing the videos from the Navy pilots and working with Avi and just thinking about that deeply. And then, of course, on this other aspect of it, my family's experience. Now, we were all grown up in traditional kind of religion. With I think myself as an Episcopalian, and my wife maybe raised the same. Catholicism influenced her a bit too, but ultimately not strict, but that was just sort of the background. And then at some point in our lives, my youngest daughter had real serious behavioral issues. And to put it, just sum it all up, she is like many of these medium that you see. She can see spirits. She saw them all the time. And a lot of listeners might just think this is just a joke or, made up. You can do some homework here. And there are people that have this ability to tap into whatever we want to call it, the other side, where people go when they die, whatever that is, the energy that people leave behind. There's a lot of ways to explain it, but it was real. And real to us. I mean, she had real experiences. It was affecting her. And we, through a lot of therapy, we were able to basically have her, now she's 13. She became adjusted and has kind of dealt with that. She sort of suppressed it actually, which is okay. I mean, she's only 13. We can take a pause and help her develop as a person and human before coming to grips with that incredible ability. And, my wife and I, we, through this experience, to just be able to help her, we came to meet several mediums who are incredibly gifted. There's one, it's on TV, Long Island medium, Teresa Caputo. Again, listeners may think that's just a joke. That woman has real ability. I went to one of her shows in Baltimore, not even a month ago, and it was incredible how she can tap into real people and their experiences. Again, I have, many people will dismiss this discussion right now, but it's sort of like a lot of people say about UFOs. I know what I saw. Well, that.
And don't worry, you're in safe hands with the majority of my audience.
Right, I've listened, but so and Let me share with you a few examples. So one of our friends is a medium, and we have readings with her. She's just very gifted. And she's, I'll just share, this is my story, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we were wondering, mostly we encountered her to help my youngest daughter. And she'd read us every now and then. And I remember we were talking about our future at a certain point a couple of years ago. And I was a, I don't remember if I was, I was a captain in the Navy, and I was in charge of the Naval Observatory. And the Naval Observatory makes those star catalogs I talked about. It also is the DOD or the National Precise Time Reference. So GPS has very precise clocks, and the reference for it is at the Naval Observatory, and it's created by a system of 100 atomic clocks. A lot of technical stuff. I sat down with her. She had no idea what my job was, and she just looked at me and said, "All I see are clocks everywhere. I don't know what this means." And you know, and I don't know if you've ever been read by anybody, Jay, that has a gift like this. But you, this is something no one can guess. You know, the technical nature of my job, no one knew. And she didn't even know. But that was one thing. And it made me just kind of go, wow. And then she had a kind of a, I guess, a prediction. And she said, you know, I don't know what this means, Tim, but because we were sure if I would promote to Admiral, okay, at that time. And she goes, "I see 5 stars over your head." And we're like, "What is that?" I was like, "There's no possibility for, there's not even a 5-star admiral in the Navy, you know, it's now 4-star, used to be 5-star in World War II." And, but ultimately we just, that was symbolic for something we couldn't guess. Well, afterwards in time, I made 1-star, but then I left the Navy and became an assistant secretary. And for a period, I was an acting undersecretary. And that position is higher than the chief of naval operations. And that is so unpredictable. And for her to have seen that, we look at that still and go, wow. I mean, we didn't see it coming. Yeah. And so there's these people that can see things, and, you know, on your, I'm listening to your shows, and that helped us with my daughter. A really interesting example was, you know, when she was really having a lot of these experiences, we had this like little camera, basically a video recorder. And we were in her room one time, which things were happening, and we just filmed it, I think. And when we looked at the tape again, as people have seen in these experiences, there were just orbs flying all around this video. I mean, seriously, many. And it was so active. And these are all things that we just couldn't believe ourselves. And my wife and I went on a journey. You know, we were raised in very traditional religious households. And these experiences, and it was out of love, by the way, that was it. We loved our daughter and we wanted to help her. And so through just meeting people, doing a lot of reading about people, these experiences, it became real to us and it opened our minds. And I don't have all the answers, but I know what we experienced. I know what she saw. And it was even in the show I shared with you. It's called Dead Files. We had Amy, I forgot her last name, but she came on and did a show with my daughter called You Will Be Mine, and our listeners can look for that. And that just profiled her experience at a time when it was pretty, and again, we contacted them because we thought she could help her, and she ultimately did help my daughter.
That's absolutely fascinating. And has anyone else in your family, do you know of any kind of history in your family of people having certain sensitivities, or is this kind of the first time this has popped up?
Well, we do know of that. I would say my father's side of the family and potentially my wife's too. Again, it's interesting how, and I've seen this happen to others who have a gift. There's sort of a family history, and I don't have details. I'm low on details because, you know, those generations didn't talk about these things a lot. It's just only been recently that my father has talked about this, but to the level, I guess, and maybe like just like the UAP phenomena, there's so much more awareness and openness now. Yeah. And you know, it's like she was not the devil. You know, she was seeing real things, and that's it. We are not going to brand her or blame her. And I think it was, and I ultimately know that it was that love that we shared, my wife and I, for her, that helped open our minds and create the right outcome of her being well-adjusted, having that in our history, not being afraid of it or ashamed of it, and being aware and open now to a lot of other things that happen in life, and maybe seeing their meaning.
Mm. No, I resonate with this because I'm of the opinion, I mean, you've watched a few of my shows, so I'm sure you know my thoughts on consciousness and the human experience. But I kind of just think that the human body is like a highly tuned waveguide, and that we could almost be seen like a biological quantum computer, a node on a network. And that the electromagnetic energy and other fundamental forces of the universe kind of represent almost a cosmic network that we're all connected to, and that our body mind brain interface can kind of act like a technology, like a sender and a receiver, and that we can move our consciousness through this network, but that we have just kind of lost touch with these innate abilities that maybe some of our more shamanistic ancestors understood to a higher degree of sophistication. And we've kind of lost touch with this with the Age of Enlightenment and material reductionism and separating ourselves from spirit. But I think that we're maybe creeping back to this. It's something that I don't know if I've coined this term, because I don't know if you've ever heard of Terence McKenna, but I listened to an unhealthy amount of Terence McKenna. And so maybe this is his philosophy leaking in, but I kind of look at the way that we've been progressing through history. We started off as very shamanistic, paganistic, tribalistic, psychedelic taking, small communities. We've now grown into this global, hyper-connected community of people where science is the leading edge, not spirit. And maybe now, and you're starting to see it through developments in quantum mechanics, developments in artificial intelligence, and then obviously on the other side of that, there's this kind of rise in things like psychedelic research and consciousness research. It kind of feels like we're going into techno shamanism, like spirit science, and that there's this melding between these two, what were once polarizing observatory lenses of reality. They're kind of coming together under this banner, because science is getting to this point where it can actually start to explain some of the more esoteric teachings that have been given to us for thousands of years by monks on hilltops talking about life. And now when you listen to a quantum physicist on a presentation, it almost sounds a little bit like a spiritual talk. They're saying the electrons in my body are the same as the electrons in yours, and everything in between us is connected through entanglement on the quantum level. It's like, you're basically just saying what spiritual teachers have been saying, but you're saying it with more complex language.
You know, Gia, I couldn't agree more. And there's a lot to unpack there, of course, but I would say that, you know, look at Einstein's E equals MC squared. Energy and mass are equivalent. So if you ponder that, then there's no reason to think that spirit, that energy, that massless energy, and our existence, there is a connection, and we're an equivalence. And I think I firmly believe that we are. And I don't believe that like science and religion, or science and spirit, are separate. Project Unity. I think there's a unification there that we are. Every day we're sort of uncovering, and that's why it is exciting. And I don't know what it is, but I. Things like you said about your body being or your mind brain being a transceiver to energy, and I know it to be true. You know that we have got, like, Cedar, my daughter, she's got messages. It's just like that there is something going on there, and I think you're right about that. And as you mentioned, there's just interesting phenomenon, like how do monarch butterflies, as they migrate to Mexico and back over successive generations, know how to do that. Those tiny little brains, what is going on there? You know, and I mean, that's a sort of a tangent, but not really. What I'm saying is there's so much we don't know, and we're starting to uncover, that can't be explained directly by, I think, our current laws of physics and current knowledge of the physical world as we know now. And so it's exciting to see every day. And, you know, explaining quantum entanglement like that, action at a distance, or whatever Einstein coined it. What was it?
Spooky action at a distance. Yeah,
that was it. Yeah, you know, that's, but it's real. In fact, much of our technology today is based on quantum principles, and now mm-hmm. we're moving into quantum computing and quantum communications. And one of my companies has quantum sensors. So it's getting there.
Yeah. We are getting to this critical mass point, I think, where there is going to be a bit of a paradigm shift, and it's exciting.
It is exciting. I thought being on your show, thank you for having me. I just wanted to say that I wanted to be on your show because here I was, fairly senior in the U.S. government from a military background primarily. And, you know, I think I just wanted to be a symbol of that awakening, that increasing awareness is okay
Yeah.
acceptable. And I'm seeing it move outside of being a fringe to potentially more mainstream.
Yeah.
And as your one guest, I think it was Ryan Ellis, talked about this
Ryan
great
Bledsoe.
deception.
Ryan Bledsoe.
Ryan Bledsoe, that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a really good
Yeah.
episode. I'm not going to repeat everything he said, but I'll just say I see a lot of things like he does. And you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, I really appreciate that. And I think that you and I need to maybe secure a time where we can talk for even longer, because we could probably go quite deep into the consciousness and awareness side of this thing. And I'd love to, I'd love to talk to you for a little bit longer on those types of topics.
Yeah, I will. Thank you. I would. Let's. We. I'd be happy to come back because
Good.
I as I've thought about with my daughter, the world's religions unify. I think when it comes to that human consciousness and or spirit, and what is that? It's there's some interesting, and you probably have seen the research going into that now, and has been in the past. And it's funny. There's a really good book out there called. Two books called Sapiens is the first book. Do you know it?
I've got it, I think, somewhere around here.
It's a good book about people and all our history. And the sequel was Homo Deus. If you've read that,
I haven't got that one, I don't think.
so you'll like this because the sequel is goes from more of the sort of biology and anthropology of people to the future where there's a more technology, AI, bioengineering component. And the
Okay.
title Homo Deus, like the prequel Sapiens, Homo sapiens, it implies that with modern medicine, technology, et cetera, we will become almost godlike. Point being is it's a really great treatment, those two books by Yuval Harari, the Israeli author, about people and their evolution.
Oh yeah, this guy.
Yeah. And then the sequel about our future with technology, but there's one thing he does not address and leaves as a question mark in his book, and it's consciousness. And I love to see that guy or somebody write that third series about consciousness and in the same level of academic rigor and intellect that he applied to the first two.
Yeah, this is I mean, this is something that people are discussing on again, a bit of a polarizing distinct camps on the debate, because yeah, there's this whole concept of we might be transcending into a kind of utopian techno shamanistic society, and it's all very exciting. But then obviously we look at the current power structures of our world and the level of corruption that's seeped into a lot of these, global infrastructures, and people are worried that actually it could turn into a dystopia with artificial surveillance and heavy monitoring of civilians. And what do you think? Are you optimistic overall? Because I feel like overall I'm actually optimistic. I feel like in the short term there might be a little bit more turbulence to iron out, and the human species is kind of going through a bit of a growing period right now. So I kind of feel like there's a little bit more shit to hit the fan, but in the long run, I kind of have hope.
The same way, things are pretty bad right now with Russia and Ukraine and a lot of other things going on. But I do have hope. It's my nature. Maybe it's ill-founded, but I'm optimistic in general. And I've seen our species do some amazing things for good. In fact, this is an interesting thing about human nature, writ large, not with every individual, but whenever there's bad, people turn it into good. You look at these school shootings. You look at I've known numerous veterans who had terrible experiences, and they've all founded nonprofits to help others. And I just it's sort it's actually a really encouraging thing about the human spirit. It always happens. Most people turn bad into good. They learn from it. They grow stronger. There are exceptions, but I see that more than I don't see it. I have a personal experience. I lost my house in Hurricane Katrina. We were on the Gulf Coast and we lost all our whole neighborhood was washed away in 28 feet of storm surge. I mean,
Jeez.
and thankfully we were okay. We evacuated and all that, it helps me become a more empathetic person, especially with people who go through these tragedies of losing their homes and such our family members. Thankfully, none of my family members were hurt, but others were. And I saw so much good people. My wife, we had nothing. She evacuated to Baltimore. I slept in my office down on the Gulf Coast in my Navy office for a couple of months and or a couple of weeks. And she went to Baltimore, and people were just donating things. There were warehouses she visited full of goods people donated to Katrina victims. And that's just our example. There's you see this all around, and I mean, I won't talk on individual specifics, but like it's the like the wounded warriors I see from in the U.S. military. All of them have turned their trials into triumphs. There's a really inspiring individual named Jason Redmond, and he's a Navy SEAL officer who was caught in an ambush and had basically half his face blown off, taking machine gun fire. And now he's a motivational speaker and he's written a book, and it's a powerful story. Jason Redmond, as one of many examples, because I work with the Navy SEALs, so I cite that example as examples of people turning bad into good. And I, so your long view is Jay is something I think I have hope for.
This is the thing about life, isn't it? On an individual level, on a collective level, you can't have up without down, dark without light, hot without cold. And so all situations lead into the next situation, leads into the next situation. And so I think that when you're having, I guess, at least in my own life, and obviously you've observed this in your life, when you are having those moments of turbulence or darkness or pain or suffering or sorrow, it's very difficult during the time to recognize what might be happening that's significant during that process. But when you reflect back on it, usually that's when you can notice how this has actually led towards where you are now, and you're in a better place, or you've learned an important lesson. And I think that the key, that maybe the secret, is to realize that enough so that when the next time something turbulent comes around, because inevitably it will, life will always hand you another thing to deal with, you can deal with it a little bit better. And so maybe right now, with the way that things are going, I mean, we've had the pandemic, we've got Russia, Ukraine, the economy, political divisions, just so much is going on. It makes me think, well, if this was my personal life, I'm probably learning a really important lesson right now with this. I just maybe don't recognize what it is, but upon reflection, hopefully I'll see why this is happening. And I think that that's why I have long-term optimism, because I just think that this is all us just kind of ironing the creases out and growing up as a species, you know?
I firmly agree. I've thought about this deeply. I think, and so many religions, they characterize this journey we're all on in a very similar way, that these hard experiences refine your soul. And I just know this to be true. And I think, so many people have trouble with the bad things that happen in life. And granted, I have not suffered like others. I'm just probably not strong enough, and that's why I never had those challenges. But I do see that happening, that people take and use those to become better. And this sort of aligns with the many people think that's what reincarnation is all about. And I don't dismiss that at all. In fact, but Christianity embraces this fully as well. And so it's most of the world's religions. And that's, I think, a beautiful thing, is that I think human understanding and is embraced this to some degree. And I think the more that we get on board, and the more people in humanity, the better off we'll be.
Well, I think that you're certainly trying to do your best to contribute to, raising the consciousness level. I really love the fact that you wanted to come on to here to basically be like, look, I am a retired US Navy Rear Admiral, but I think that you can still be all into trying to raise awareness and consciousness and bring that vibe and look at things in reality in a different way. And I think that, people who have had careers like yourself and are very respectable in their fields, it's important that people realize, oh, actually, no, I can be a serious person and do a serious job and do good at my job, and also have philosophical ideas about reality. Because why can't we? We are, as human beings, we are dreamers and creators and thinkers. So like, we should celebrate that. And I think that we're in that process now of going, actually, it's okay to think about UFOs or the paranormal or different dimensions intersecting with our own. These are all things that are now starting to become a little bit more reasonable to speak about. We're just at the beginning stages with the UFO issue, but I have hope. I think that we're starting to open up.
I do too, Jay. And I do believe we're all connected. You feel it, you experience it every day in many ways. And that's is my main job in the government, was leading and being a senior officer, being a leader, and being just mindful of those connections made me a much better leader, and vice versa. That awareness, or my leadership, helped me gain greater awareness about those connections. So it's yeah. So thank you. I mean, I appreciate you having me on. And I'm looking forward to our next version and our next iteration. And thank you for what you do.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And I really appreciate that you're a fan of the podcast as well. That's put a good smile on my face. And I do have to quickly apologize to my Patreons because a bunch of them sent in questions. We're going to have to do a 2.0, my man, because we're going to have to get you back on. And there's listener questions. People were asking all sorts. So maybe we can schedule something when you've got more time.
Sounds good, Jay. Yeah, I will do that. I'd love to answer some questions next round. And I'm in Gisaka, Egypt. I'm heading to Paris and Greece after that. So maybe we'll come back and talk about maybe what I learned there. And wonderful. Thank you.
Oh, sounds awesome, man. Willie, you've got a great vibe to you. I think you've got an awesome energy. And I look forward to speaking to you soon.